Hi, this is Rob Yas, your host of Musings on Systems Change with another podcast on green capitalism. And today we're going to look at some of the history of environmentalism or lack of environmentalism or going back into historical societies in which ecology was deeply followed, encouraged, lived by. But we're also going to look into history and find places, historical societies in which the environment was not taken well care of. Because it is not as simple as some Greens believe that lack of environmentalism started with capitalism, started with modernity and science and exploitation of the earth through scientific inventions and so on. It isn't that simple. We may want to think that it is that simple, but it isn't that simple. And because looking at these causes, these deeper causes of environmental destruction is important, because if we want to create a society that is not based on destruction of the environment and on equality and on exploitation of people, we need to look at why that is. What are the main causes? Why are they part of being human, and how can we overcome them? So this is the theme. I think this is a very important, very exciting theme. I hope you're with me. So let's take a journey back into the past. We're going to look at a brief history of environmental ignorance. Pollution of water and air, loss of habitat, global warming, overfishing, water scarcity, deforestation. These are only some of the many environmental problems we are experiencing today. Faced with these daunting and often global problems, many wish to turn back the clock to a simpler time when humans lived in harmony with nature. But that time may never truly have existed all over the planet at all times. Ryan Eisler, social activist, says, "If we carefully examine both our past and present, we see that many peoples, past and present, living close to nature, have all too often been blindly destructive to their environment." Ryan Eisler warns against idolizing ancient tribal cultures, since they, like us moderns, also overgrazed and deforested land to feed growing numbers of people. While many tribal habits were ecologically sound, and ancient peoples often lived within their means, they also lacked the capacity to destroy the environment on a global scale. But locally, their environment sometimes suffered severe blows. Easter Island, for example, was so depleted of natural resources that most of the Rapa Nui had evacuated the area when white explorers arrived in 1772. The once thriving forests were gone, and only large, mysterious stone sculptures welcomed the newcomers to the denuded and depopulated island. Perhaps religious concerns trumped their concerns for their environment. We may never know. Similarly, large portions of New Zealand had been deforested by the Maoris before the whites arrived, and the Mediterranean basin was overcut and overgrazed thousands of years ago. The scars of the erosion still visible today. Theodore Rozsack, one of the founders of eco-psychology, he said that, and he was also a staunch advocate for tribal peoples and their wisdom, pointed out that tribal societies, quote, "in their ignorance, blighted portions of their habitat sufficiently to endanger their own survival. River valleys have been devastated, forests denuded, the topsoil worn away, but that damage was limited and temporary because there were less people on the planet during that time." However, we shouldn't just point fingers into the past either, because there were people living in ecological harmony with their surroundings. So let's look at ecological wisdom and some ecological science from the past that we can hopefully emulate now in the future. Despite our ancestors' ability to destroy parts of their environment, they also acquired deep knowledge about the natural habitat they lived in, and they often protected it for future generations to behold and to draw nourishment from. They were knowledgeable in herbal medicine, and they protected the forests to make sure their medicines were available for those who came after them. Their low-impact economies were indeed often sacred. The Indians of South America had developed vast forest gardens in the Amazon more than 1,500 years ago. It is estimated some of these large gardens could feed over 100,000 people. The topsoil in these bountiful gardens was 6 feet deep, and the soil was mixed with charcoal, enabling the soil to hold nutrients much longer than before and thus give greater harvests without depleting the soil. Science writer Charles C. Mann, the author of 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus, a book about life in the Americas before the European colonizers arrived, suggests that the Amazon is not just a vast and wild jungle, but in part a planned garden gone wild, a true cultural and ecological wonder. Man claims that these ancient peoples possessed deep knowledge about ecology and were practicing a form of agriculture similar to modern permaculture. Based on the science of systems ecology, the three main permaculture principles are: 1, to take care of the earth; 2, to take care of the people; 3, to return the surplus. Permaculture is thus a new form of agriculture integrating both old and new science with the goal of creating a future for people and planet to flourish together in greater ecological harmony, rather than letting surplus wealth created by farming accumulate in the hands of a few corporations or private enterprises, such as is common in today's industrial farming. A permaculture operation merges economic and ecological interests. All surplus is recycled back into the system itself. Now, think about that as a way of doing economics on a large scale, a regenerative economy on a large scale. While the ecological wisdom exhibited by indigenous peoples is as old as humanity itself, modern ecological science has its roots in the natural science that emerged from the Greek philosophers Aristotle and Hippocrates. The word itself stems from the Greek oikos, house, and is in a sense the study of our earth household, the scientific study of the interactions between organisms and their environment. The word economics comes from the same root, pointing toward the important interrelationship between the two sciences. Modern ecological science emerged at the end of the 19th century as the interdisciplinary study of evolution, ecosystems, and biology, and their relations to the larger environment or ecosystem. An ecosystem maintains life-supporting functions for animals and humans and produces natural capital in the form of food, fuel, fiber, and medicine. Hence, the need to maintain a close relation between ecology and economy. Indeed, a growing number of economic thinkers maintain that economics needs to be developed deeply rooted in ecological awareness. When ecological thinking, the idea that the global ecosystem includes nature as well as human society, will be used to inform economic planning and action, we will be better equipped to prevent environmental disasters such as humanity is currently experiencing. So, this is a very important point, that the root of both ecology and economy is from the word oikos, from the Greek oikos, meaning to take care of the earth household. And this is what we need to do with our economy, just like these ancient indigenous permaculturalists did in the Amazon rainforest. We need to create an economy that is regenerative, truly ecological, truly returns back into the system the nutrients that it has taken out. a recycled economy, not the recycling in the sense of cycling it into another product necessarily, but basically back into the same cycle. You produce something that is an effluent and you bring it back into the same industrial cycle so that it doesn't escape the cycle, doesn't end up in the landfill, doesn't end up as something else. So that is what we can learn and what we must learn from the ancient ecologists of the past. At the same time, we need to realize that we made many mistakes in the past as well, and not just glorify the past and think that if we all became natives, everything will be hunky-dory, because we as humanity, we have made many mistakes in the past as well, and we need to learn from those mistakes and not glorify any system in the past or any system in the present. That is, I think, to really create systems change, to take into everything into account, to embrace the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the glorious. Thank you for listening. This has been Roar Bjørnes with Musings on Systems Change. Next time, we're going to continue and we're going to talk about growth or no growth. Do we want growth or no growth? Or is there something in between? Come back and listen. Thank you for being here.